Disc 8.
The group waited, eyes searching the misty gloom. Suddenly, Captain Tarples and a scouting party of Gungans riding Kadu emerged from the haze, electropoles and energy spears held at the ready.
"Hey de ho, Captain Tarples!"
Jar Jar greeted cheerfully.
"Binks!"
the Gungan leader exclaimed in disbelief.
"Not again!"
Jar Jar shrugged nonchalantly.
"We come to see the boss."
Tarples rolled his eyes.
"Ouch time, Binks. Ouch time for all of yous, maybe."
Herding them together, Gungans on Kadu providing a perimeter escort on all sides, Tarples led them deeper into the swamp. The canopy formed by the limbs of the trees became so thick that the sky and the sun almost disappeared. Bits and pieces of statuary began to surface, crumbling stone facades and plinths sinking in the mire. Vines snaked their way across the broken remains, dropping down from limbs that twisted and wound together in vast wooden nets. Pushing through a high stand of sawgrass, they arrived in a clearing filled with Gungan refugees. Men, women, and children of all ages and descriptions huddled together on a broad, dry rise, many with their possessions gathered around them. Tarples led the company past the refugees to where the ruins of what had once been a grand temple were being slowly reclaimed by the swamp. Platforms and stairs were all that remained intact, the columns and ceilings having long ago collapsed and broken apart. The massive heads and limbs of stone statues poked out of the mire, fingers clutching weapons and eyes staring sightlessly into space. At the far end of the ruins, Boss Nass appeared, lumbering out of shadows with several more of the Gungan Council, to stand atop a stone head partially submerged in the water. Amidala and her retinue approached to within hailing distance over a network of causeways and islands.
"Jar Jar Binks, what are yous doing back?"
Boss Nass rumbled angrily.
"You supposed to take these outlanders and no come back? Yous pay good this time."
The fleshy head swiveled.
"Who yous bring here to the Gungan sacred place?"
The queen stepped forward at once, white face lifting.
"I am Amidala, queen of the Nabu."
"Nabu!" Boss Nass thundered. "No like the Nabu. Yous bring the Makaniks. They bust up our homes. They drive us all out."
A heavy arm lifted, pointing at the queen.
"Yous all bombad. Yous all die, maybe."
Anakin noticed suddenly that they were completely surrounded by Gungans, some on Kadu, some on foot, all with electropoles, energy spears, and some sort of throwing device. Captain Panaka and the Nabu guards were looking around nervously, hands straying toward their blasters. The Jedi flanked the queen and her handmaidens, but their arms hung loose at their sides.
"We wish to form an alliance with you," Amidala tried again.
"We no form nothing with the Nabu," Boss Nass roared angrily.
Abruptly, Padme detached herself from the others and stepped in front of the queen.
"You did well, Sabe. But I will have to do this myself," she said quietly, and turned to face Boss Nass.
"Who dis?"
the head Gungan snapped. Standing next to Anakin, R2-D2 beeped softly in recognition. The droid had figured it out first. Padme straightened.
"I am Queen Amidala," she announced in a loud, clear voice. "Sabe serves from time to time as my decoy, my loyal bodyguard. I am sorry for my deception, but given the circumstances, I am sure you can understand."
She turned to the Jedi, her eyes shifting momentarily to find Anakin.
"Gentlemen, I apologize for misleading you."
Her eyes returned quickly to Boss Nass, who was frowning suspiciously, clearly not understanding any of what was happening.
"Although our people do not always agree, Your Honor," she continued, her voice softening. "We have always lived in peace. Until now. The Trade Federation, with its tanks and its mechaniques, has destroyed all that we have worked so hard to build. The Gungans are in hiding, and the Nabu have been imprisoned in camps. If we do not act quickly, all that we value will be lost forever." She stretched out her hands. "I ask you to help us, Your Honor." She paused. "No, I beg you to help us." She dropped abruptly to one knee in front of the astonished leader of the Gungans. There was an audible gasp of surprise from the Nabu. "We are your humble servants, Your Honor," Padme said so that all could hear. "Our fate is in your hands. Please help us." She motioned, and one by one, her handmaidens, Panaka, and the Nabu pilots and guards dropped to their knees beside her. Anakin and the Jedi were the last to join them. Out of the corner of his eye, Anakin saw Jar Jar standing virtually alone in their midst, staring around in wonderment and shock. For a moment, no one said anything. Then a slow, deep rumble of laughter rose out of the throat of Boss Nass.
"Ho, ho, ho! Me like this! Tis good! Yous no think yous greater than the Gungans!"
The head Gungan came forward, reaching out with one hand.
"You stand, Queen Amidal. Yous talk with me, okay? Maybe we gonna be friends after all."
The senior Sith Lord appeared in a shimmer of robes and shadows as his protégé and the Nemoidians walked slowly down the corridor leading from the throne room back to the plaza. "We have sent out patrols," Newt Gunray said, concluding his report to the ominous figure in the projection. "We have already located their starship in the swamp. It won't be long until we have them in hand, my lord." Darth Sidious was silent. For a moment, Newt Gunray was afraid he hadn't been heard.
"This is an unexpected move for the Queen," the Sith Lord said at last, his voice so low it could barely be heard. "It is too aggressive. Lord Maul, be mindful."
"Yes, master,"
the other Sith growled softly, yellow eyes gleaming.
"Be patient," Darth Sidious purred,
head lowered in cowled shadows, hands folded into black robes.
"Let them make the first move."
In silence, Darth Maul and the Nemoidians continued on as the hologram slowly faded away. Boss Nass was as mercurial as he was large, and his change of attitude toward the Nabu was dramatic. Once he decided that the Queen did not consider herself his superior, that she was in fact quite sincere in her plea for Gungan help, he was quick to come around. The fact that his dislike of the battle droids was every bit as strong as hers didn't hurt matters, of course. Perhaps he had been hasty in his belief that the mechaniques wouldn't find the Gungans in the swamps. Otagunga had been attacked at daybreak 2 days earlier, and its inhabitants driven from their homes. Boss Nass was not about to sit still for that. If a plan could be put together to drive the invaders out, the Gungan army would do its part to help. He took Amidala and her companions out of the swamp to the edge of the grass plains that ran south to the Nabu capital city of Theed. Any attack would be mounted from here, and the Queen had come to the Gungans with a very specific plan of attack in mind. The first step in that plan involved sending Captain Panaka on a reconnaissance of the city. As they stood looking out from the misty confines of the swamp toward the open grasslands, waiting for Panaka's return, Boss Nass trundled up to Jar Jar.
"You's doing grand, Jar Jar Binks," he rumbled,
wrapping a meaty arm around the slender Gungan's shoulders.
"You's bring the Nabu and the Gungan together. 'Tis very brave thing."
Jar Jar shuffled his feet and looked embarrassed.
"Ah, you's no go saying that. 'Tis not an.
No, you's grand warrior,
Boss Nass declared, squeezing the air out of his compatriot with a massive hug.
No, no, no,
the other persisted bashfully.
So, Boss Nass concluded brightly, we make you's Bombad General in the Gungan army.
What?
Jar Jar exclaimed in dismay.
General? Me? No, no, no,
he gasped, and his eyes rolled up, his tongue fell out, and he fainted dead away. Padme was in conference with the Jedi and the Gungan generals, to whose number Jar Jar Binks had just been added. So Anakin, at loose ends, had wandered over to keep company with the Gungan sentries who were keeping lookout for Panaka. The Gungans patrolled the swamp perimeter on Kadu and kept watch through macro binoculars from treetops and the remains of ancient statuary, making certain Federation scouting parties didn't come up on them unexpectedly. Anakin stood at the base of a temple column, still trying to come to terms with Padme's revelation. Everyone had been surprised, of course, but no one more than he. He wasn't sure how he felt about her now, knowing she wasn't just a girl, but a queen. He had declared he would marry her some day, believing it so. But how could someone who had been a slave all his life marry a queen? He wanted to talk to her, but there wasn't any opportunity for that here. He supposed things wouldn't be the same after this, but he wished they could. He liked her as much now as he had before, and to tell the truth, he didn't care if she was a queen or not. He glanced over at the girl and the Jedi Knights, and thought how different things were here than they had been on Tatooine. Nothing had worked out the way he had hoped for any of them, and it remained to be seen if leaving his mother and home to come with them was a good idea after all. The Gungan lookout, standing atop a piece of statuary above him, gave a grunt.
"They coming,"
he called down, peering out into the grasslands through his macro binoculars. Anakin gave a yell in response and raced over to Padme, the Jedi, and the Gungan generals. "They're back!" he shouted. Everyone turned to watch a squad of four speeders skim over the flats and pull to a stop in the concealing shadow of the swamp. Captain Panaka and several dozen Naboo soldiers, officers, and starfighter pilots jumped down. Panaka made his way directly to the Queen. "I think we got through without being detected, Your Highness," he advised quickly, brushing the dust from his clothing. "What is the situation?" she asked as the others crowded close to them. Panaka shook his head. "Most of our people are in the detention camps. A few hundred officers and guards have formed an underground movement to resist the invasion. I've brought as many of the leaders as I could find." "Good." Padme nodded appreciatively toward Boss Nass. "The Gungans have a larger army than we imagined."
"Very, very Bombad," the Gungan chief rumbled.
Panaka exhaled wearily.
"You'll need it. The Federation army is much larger than we thought, too. And stronger."
He gave the Queen a considering look.
"In my opinion, this isn't a battle we can win, Your Highness."
Standing at the edge of the circle, Jar Jar Binks looked down at Anakin and rolled his eyes despairingly. But Padme was undeterred.
"I don't intend to win it, Captain. The battle is a diversion. We need the Gungans to draw the droid army away from Theed, so we can infiltrate the palace and capture the Nimoidian Viceroy. The Trade Federation cannot function without its head. Nimoidians don't think for themselves. Without the Viceroy to command them, they will cease to be a threat."
She waited for them to consider her plan, eyes fixing automatically on Qui-Gon Jinn.
"What do you think, Master Jedi?" she asked.
"It is a well-conceived plan," Qui-Gon acknowledged. "It appears to be your best possible move, Your Highness, although there is great risk. Even with the droid army in the field, the Viceroy will be well guarded, and many of the Gungans may be killed."
Boss Nass snorted derisively.
"They Bombad guns no get through our shields. We ready to fight."
Jar Jar gave Anakin another eye roll, but this time Boss Nass saw him do so,
and gave his new general a hard warning look. Padme was thinking.
We could reduce the Gungan casualties by securing the main hangar and sending our pilots to knock out their orbiting control ship. Without the control ship to signal them, the droid army can't function at all.
Everyone nodded in agreement.
But if the Viceroy should escape, Your Highness,
Obi-Wan pointed out darkly,
he will return with another droid army, and you'll be no better off than you are now. Whatever else happens, you must capture him.
Indeed, we must, Padme agreed.
Everything depends on it. Cut off the head, and the serpent dies. Without the Viceroy, the Trade Federation collapses.
They moved on to other matters then, beginning a detailed discussion of battle tactics and command responsibilities. Anakin stood listening for a moment, then eased his way close to Qui-Gon and tugged on his sleeve.
"What about me?" he asked quietly.
The Jedi Master put a hand on the boy's head and smiled. "You stay close to me, Annie. Do as I say, and you'll be safe." Keeping safe wasn't quite what the boy had in mind, but he let the matter drop, satisfied that as long as he was close to Qui-Gon, he wouldn't be far from the action. In the Theed Palace throne room, Darth Sidious loomed in hologram form before Darth Maul, Battle Droid Commander OOM-9, and the Nemoidians. Smooth and silky, his voice oozed through the shadowy ether.
"Our young queen surprises me," he whispered thoughtfully, hidden within his dark robes. "She is more foolish than I thought."
"We are sending all available troops to meet this army of hers," Newt Gunray offered quickly. "It appears to be assembling at the edge of the swamp.
Primitives, my lord, nothing better. We do not expect much resistance."
"I am increasing security at all Naboo detention camps," OOM-9 intoned. Darth Maul glared at nothing, then shook his horned head.
"I feel there is more to this than what we know, my master. The two Jedi may be using the Queen for their own purposes."
"The Jedi cannot become involved," Darth Sidious soothed, hands spreading in a placating motion.
"They can only protect the Queen. Even Qui-Gon Jinn cannot break that covenant. This will work to our advantage."
Darth Maul snorted, anxious to get on with it.
"I have your approval to proceed then, my lord," Newt Gunray asked hesitantly, avoiding the younger Sith's mad eyes.
"Proceed," Darth Sidious ordered softly.
"Wipe them out, Viceroy. All of them."
20. By midday, with the sun overhead in a cloudless sky and the wind died away to nothing, the grasslands lying south of Theed between the Naboo capital city and the Gungan swamp lay empty and still. Heat rose off the grasslands in a soft shimmer, and it was so quiet that from 100 meters away the chirp of birds and the buzz of insects could be heard as if they were settled close by. Then the Trade Federation Army's bubble-nosed transports and armor-wrapped tanks roared onto the rolling meadows, skimming the tall grasses in gleaming waves of bright metal. It was quiet in the swamps as well, the perpetual twilight hushed and expectant beneath the vast canopy of limbs and vines, the surface of the mire as smooth and unbroken as glass, the reeds and rushes motionless in the windless air. Here and there, a water bug jumped soundlessly from place to place, stirring puddles to life in the wake of its passing, bending blades of grass like springboards. Birds swooped and banked in bright flashes of color, darting from limb to limb. Small animals crept from cover to drink and feed, eyes bright, noses twitching, senses alert. Then the Gungan army surfaced in a rippling of murky water and a stream of bubbles, lop-eared heads popping up like corks, first one, then another, and finally hundreds, and eventually thousands. Both on the plain and in the swamp, the small animals raced back into hiding, the birds took wing, and the insects went to ground.
Astride their Kadu, the Gungans rode from their concealment with armor strapped to their amphibious bodies and weapons held at the ready. They carried long-hafted energy spears and metal-handled ball slings for long-distance fighting and energy shields for close combat. The Kadu shook themselves as they reached dry ground, shedding the swamp water from their smooth skins, eyes picking out the solid patches of ground as their riders urged them on. Numbers swelling as they reached the fringes of the swamp, the Gungans began to form up in ranks of riders that stretched away as far as the eye could see. As the first wave rode clear, the swamp boiled anew with the appearance of Famba. Huge four-legged lizards with long necks and tails and massive scaly bodies. The Famba bore shield generators atop their broad backs, machines that, when linked, would activate a force field to protect the Gungan soldiers against Trade Federation weaponry. The Famba lumbered heavily beneath their loads, necks craning from side to side as their drivers prodded them impatiently. Jar Jar Binks rode with them at the head of his new command, wondering what it was he was supposed to do. Mostly, he believed he was supposed to stay out of the way. Certainly, the other generals and even his own subordinate officers had made it clear that this was what they preferred. Boss Nass might think it clever to make him a general in the Gungan army, but the career officers found it less amusing. General Seal, who was commander-in-chief, grunted sourly at Jar Jar on being informed of his new position, and told him to set a good example for his people and die well. Jar Jar had responded to all this by keeping a low profile until the march out of the swamp began, and then he had assumed his required position at the head of his command. He had gotten barely 100 meters after emerging from concealment when he had fallen off his Kadu. No one had bothered to stop to help him climb back on, and so now he was riding somewhere in the middle of his troops.
"'Tis very bombad,' he kept whispering to himself as he rode with the others through the marshy haze.
Slowly, steadily, the Gungan army cleared the tangle of the swamps and moved out onto the open grasslands where the Trade Federation army was already waiting. Anakin Skywalker hunkered down in the shadows of a building directly across from the main hangar of the Naboo Starfleet in the city of Theed. It was quiet here as well. The bulk of the battle droids dispatched to the field to deal with the Gungan army, the remainder scattered throughout the city in patrols and on perimeter watch. Nevertheless, tanks crowded the plaza fronting the hangar complex, and a strong contingent of battle droids warded the Naboo fleet. Seizing control of the starfighters was not going to be easy. Anakin glanced over at those with him. Padme, dressed as a handmaiden, crouched with Erte beside the Jedi, waiting for Captain Panaka's command to get into position on the other side of the square. Sabe, the decoy queen, and her handmaidens wore battle dress, loose-fitting and durable, with blasters strapped to their sides. R2-D2 blinked silently from behind them in the company of 20-odd Naboo officers, guards, and pilots, all armed and ready. It seemed to the boy like a pathetically small number of fighters to carry the day, but it was all they had. At least Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan were talking again. They had begun doing so on the journey in from the swamps. A few words here, a few there, exchanging comments guardedly, testing the waters. Anakin had listened carefully, more attuned to the nuances of their conversation than others could be, hearing in the inflection of their voices more than simply the words spoken. After a time, when the words had healed enough of the breach that they felt comfortable again, there were smiles, brief and almost sad, but clear in their purpose. The Jedi were old friends, and their relationship that of father and son. They did not want to toss it all away over a single disagreement. Anakin was thankful for that, especially since the disagreement in question was over him. Padme had spoken to him as well, joining him for a few moments as they approached the city through the forests east, her smile banishing all his doubts and fears in a moment's time.
"I'm sorry I couldn't tell you sooner," she said, apologizing for hiding her identity. "I know it was a surprise."
"It's okay," he said, shrugging bravely. I guess knowing I'm a queen makes you feel differently about me, doesn't it? She asked.
I guess, but that's okay. Just so you still like me. Because I still like you.
He looked over at her hopefully.
Of course, Annie. Telling you who I really am doesn't mean my feelings for you have changed. I was the same person before, whether you knew the truth about me or not.
He thought about it a moment.
I suppose.
He brightened.
So, I guess my feelings for you shouldn't be any different now either.
She moved away, smiling broadly back at him, and just at that moment he felt 10 meters tall. So now he was at peace with himself about the Jedi and Padme, but was beset with new concerns. What if something happened to them during the fight ahead? What if they were hurt, or even... He couldn't bring himself to finish the thought. Nothing bad would happen to them, that was all. He wouldn't let it.
He glanced at them, kneeling in silence at the edge of the plaza, and promised himself he would keep them safe, no matter what. That would be his job.
His mouth tightened with determination as he made his pledge.
Once we get inside, Annie, you find a safe place to hide until this is over.
Qui-Gon advised suddenly, bending close, almost as if he could read the boy's mind.
Sure, Anakin promised.
And stay there, the Jedi Master added firmly. Across the way, Panaka and his contingent of fighters were in position now, placing the tanks and battle droids in a crossfire with Padme's group. Padme produced a small glow rod and flashed a coded signal to Panaka across the square. All around Anakin, weapons slid free of holsters and fastenings, and safeties were released.
Then Panaka's fighters opened up on the battle droids, blasters shattering their metal bodies in a hail of laser fire. Other droids wheeled about in response and began exchanging fire, drawn toward the source of the conflict and away from Padme's group.
Qui-Gon came to his feet.
Stay close, Qui-Gon whispered to him.
A moment later, the boy was running with the Jedi, Padme, Erte, R2-D2, and their Naboo contingent of soldiers and pilots toward the open door of the hangar.
Jar Jar sat tall astride his Kadu, having regained his composure and resumed his position at the head of his troop. The Gungan army was spread out all along the grasslands on either side of where he rode, for as far as the eye could see. Birdlike, the Kadu picked their way through the tall grasses, heads dipping, Gungan riders swaying with the motion. The Gungans wore leather and metal headgear and body armor, with small circular shields strapped at their hips, and triplate energy packs for abetting the force field jutting like metal feathers from their saddlebacks. The Famba, bearing the shield generators, were spaced evenly down their lines to achieve maximum protection once the generators were activated. Like tanks, the massive lizards lumbered amidst the more nimble Kadu, and the grassland shook with the weight of their passing. At the head of the army rode General Seal and his command unit, the flags of Otagunga and the other Gungan cities borne in their wake at the end of long poles. The army crested a rise, a great rolling wave of dark bodies, and on a hand signal from General Seal, drew to a halt. Across a long, shallow depression, its position secure on the next ridge over, the Trade Federation army waited. Lines of staps and tanks formed the first rank, spread out over a distance of more than a kilometer. Armor plating and weapons gleaming in the midday sun. Buttressing the smaller vehicles were the huge Federation transports, massive bodies hovering just off the ground, bulbous nose gates closed and pointed forward toward the Gungans. Battle droids controlled tanks and staps, faceless and empty metal shells impervious to pain, devoid of emotion, and programmed to fight until destroyed. Jar Jar Binks stared at the droid army in awe. There was not a living creature in sight, not one made of flesh and blood, not one that would react to the terrible roil of battle as the Gungans would. It made his skin crawl to think of what that meant. The Famba were in place now, and General Seal activated the shield generators.
The big turbines hummed to life, and a pulse of red light arced from a generator atop one Famba to a dish atop the next, the beam widening and broadening as it grew in size to encompass the whole of the Gungan army until each soldier in Kadu was safely enfolded. The coloring of the protective light changed from red to gold, shimmering like a mirage on a desert. The effect was to make it appear as if the Gungan army was underwater, as if it had been swallowed in a bright, clear sea. The Federation was quick to test the shield's effectiveness. On a signal from droid commander OOM-9, who in turn was responding to a command from the Deep Space Control Center, the tanks opened fire, their laser cannon sending round after round into the covering. Searing beams hammered into the shield and shattered ineffectively against the liquid energy surface, unable to penetrate. Within their protective covering, the Gungans waited patiently, weapons ready, trusting the strength of their shield. Astride his Kadu, Jar Jar Binks flinched and squirmed fearfully, muttering various prayers to ward off the destruction he was certain would find him otherwise. Relentlessly, the Trade Federation cannons continued their attack, streamers of energy lancing from their barrel mounts, pounding at the covering. The flash and burn and explosion were blinding and deafening, but the Gungans held their ground. Finally, the Trade Federation guns went still. Try as they might, they could not break through the Gungan energy shield. Within their protective canopy, the Gungans cheered and brandished their weapons triumphantly. But now the tanks and staps withdrew, and the massive transports advanced to the fore. The rounded nose doors opened, widening to reveal a cluster of racks mounted within. The racks rolled forward on long rails, revealing row after row of battle droids neatly folded up and suspended on hooks. When the racks were fully extended, they began to lower and separate outward, filling the open space in front of the transports with thousands of droids. Positioned at the forefront of their army, General Seal and his Gungan commanders exchanged worried looks. Now the racks began to release the battle droids, who unfolded in unison into standing positions, arms and legs extended, bodies straight. Metal hands reached back over shoulders to pull free the blaster rifles with which each unit was equipped. On command from OOM-9, the entire array of battle droids began to march toward the Gungan army, bright metal ranks filling the grasslands from horizon to horizon. The Gungan shield wall was designed to deflect large, slow-moving objects of density and mass, such as artillery vehicles, and small, fast-moving objects generating extreme heat, such as projectiles from weapons fire. But it would not deflect small, slow-moving droids, even massed together in such numbers as they were here. Jar Jar Binks began to wish he were somewhere else, thinking that as mighty as the Gungan army was, it was dwarfed by the metal machine that marched against it now. But the Gungans had come prepared for battle, and they were not so deterred by the number of their enemies that they were ready to quit. All up and down their lines, Gungans activated their energy spears and straight-handled slings, arming them for the attack. At the foot of the rise on which they waited, the front ranks of the battle droids reached the perimeter of the energy field and began to pass through. The shield had no effect on them. Lifting their blasters to their shoulders, they began to fire. Amid a wail of great curved battle horns, the Gungans retaliated. A shower of spears rained down on the advancing droids, shafts and points exploding on impact, ripping metal limbs and torsos apart. Energy balls flung from the slings followed, inflicting further damage. Mortars dumped their loads in the center of the droid ranks, opening huge gaps in the attack. The battle droids reeled and slowed, then regained momentum and came on, hundreds more taking the place of those who had fallen, marching mindlessly through the protective shield and into the range of the Gungan weapons. At the center of his command unit, General Seal urged his warriors on, tightening his defensive lines in front of the Famba and the shield generators to protect them from harm, knowing that if the force field came down, the Trade Federation's tanks would strike the Gungans as well. Battle droid ranks, metal parts reflecting sun and fire,
and Gungan lines, orange-skinned and supple, closed to do battle. Resisting the temptation to shut his eyes against what he knew was coming, Jar Jar Binks kicked his heels into the flanks of his Kadu and charged ahead with the rest of his command. In the relative seclusion of the Theed Palace throne room, in a place they had believed safely removed from any real danger, Newt Gunray and Rune Hakko stared at a giant viewscreen and its rapidly changing images of the battle taking place in the main hangar. The Jedi Knights were inside the complex, accompanied by Naboo soldiers and pilots, their lightsabers wreaking havoc on the battle droids who tried to stop them.
"How did they get into the city?" Rune Hakko whispered in dismay.
Newt Gunray shook his head.
"I don't know. I thought the battle was going to take place far from here."
His eyes were wide and staring.
"This is too close."
They turned as one when Darth Maul stalked into the room, bearing a long-handled lightsaber. Yellow eyes gleamed out of the Sith's red and black tattooed face, and his dark cloak billowed out behind him. Newt Gunray and Rune Hakko backed away instinctively, neither of them wanting to get in the way.
"Lord Maul,"
Gunray greeted, inclining his head briefly. Darth Maul glanced at him disdainfully.
"I told you there was more to this than was apparent."
His eyes had a wild, manic look to them.
"The Jedi have come to Theed for a reason, Viceroy. They have a plan of their own for defeating us."
"A plan?"
the Nemoidian asked worriedly.
"One that will fail, I assure you."
The striped face glinted wickedly in the light.
"I have waited a long time for this. I have trained for it endlessly. The Jedi will regret their decision to return here."
There was an edge to his rough voice that was frightening. The Sith was anxious for this confrontation, his body coiled and ready, his hands flexing about his weapon. The Nemoidians did not envy those he sought.
"Wait here until I return," he ordered abruptly, and swept past them.
"Where are you going?"
Newt Gunray demanded frantically as the Sith Lord crossed toward the speeder docks.
"Where do you think I'm going, Viceroy?"
the others sneered.
"I'm going to the main hangar to rid you of the Jedi once and for all."
21. Anakin Skywalker rushed through the open doors of the main hangar after the Jedi and Padme, with R2-D2 and the rest of the Naboo freedom fighters on their heels. Battle droids turned to confront them, but lightsabers and blasters cut apart the foremost before the others even knew what was happening. The droids rallied in response, summoning help from without, but Panaka and his men had those in the plaza already occupied, and for a moment the Jedi and the Naboo were in control. Mindful of Qui-Gon's admonition, Anakin ducked beneath the fuselage of the closest starfighter, laser bolts searing the air around him in brilliant bursts of fire.
"Get to your ships!"
Padme shouted at her pilots, leading the contingent of Naboo soldiers under her command in pursuit of the retreating battle droids. Ducking and crouching, she fired her blaster with quick, precise moves, bringing down droid after droid, her charges finding their targets with unerring accuracy. The Jedi fought just ahead of her, blocking droid laser fire with their lightsabers, striking down those unfortunate enough to cross their path. But it was Padme on whom Anakin's eyes were riveted, for not only had he never seen this side of her, he hadn't even known it existed. She moved with the skill and training of a seasoned fighter, no longer seeming in any way a young girl, becoming instead a deadly combatant. He thought suddenly of his dream of Padme leading an army in another time and place, and suddenly the dream didn't seem so impossible. Pilots from the attacking force and R2 units freed from storage in the hangar lockers moved quickly to board the Naboo fighters, scattering swiftly through the hail of blaster fire. Clambering aboard their starships, pilots in the cockpits, R2 units in their sockets, they switched on their control panels and ignited their engines. A roar of power filled the massive hangar, drowning out the sound of laser fire, building to an ear-shattering crescendo. One by one, the fighters began to levitate and shift into position for takeoff. A Naboo pilot rushed past Anakin and climbed into the fighter he was crouched behind. "Better get out of here, kid," she called down from the cockpit. "Find yourself a new hiding place. You're about to lose this one."
Anakin darted away in a low crouch, droid blaster fire crisscrossing the air above him, centering on the departing ships. The fighter he had abandoned began to lift off, wheeling toward the open hangar doors. Other ships were already speeding away into the blue, engines booming. As the Jedi and the Naboo fighters continued to push the droid hangar watch steadily back, Anakin searched hastily for a new hiding place. Then he heard R2-D2 whistle at him from another fighter close at hand, the little droid already ensconced in his socket, domed head rotating, control lights flashing. The boy raced across the hangar floor, littered with the shattered bodies of battle droids, laser fire whizzing all about him, and jumped into the cockpit with a gasp of relief. Peering out from the safety of his bolt hole, he watched the last pair of Naboo fighters rocket out of the hangar. The first got free, but the second was hit by tank fire and knocked sideways, so that it pinwheeled into the ground and exploded in a ball of flame. Anakin winced and crouched lower. Now Panaka, Sabe, and the Naboo soldiers who had been engaged in combat outside the hangar burst through the doors as well, firing as they came. Caught in a crossfire, the remaining battle droids were quickly overwhelmed and destroyed. There was a hurried conference between the Jedi, Padme, and Panaka, and then the entire Naboo fighting force began to move toward an exit in the hangar that took them directly past Anakin's hiding place. "Hey, where are you going?" the boy asked, popping his head out of the cockpit as they passed.
"Annie, you stay there," Qui-Gon ordered, motioning him back down. His long hair was wild and his face intense. "Stay right where you are."
The boy ignored him, standing up instead.
"No, I want to go with you and Padme."
"Stay in that cockpit," Qui-Gon snapped in a tone of voice that brooked no argument.
Anakin froze, undecided, as the contingent hurried past him toward the exit door, weapons at the ready. He did not want to be left behind. He had no intention of letting Qui-Gon and Padme go on without him, especially since he could do nothing to help them if he was stuck here in this empty hangar. He was still wrestling with the matter when the entire group slowed in front of the exit door. A dark cloaked figure stepped through the opening to confront them. Anakin's breath caught in his throat. It was the Sith Lord who had attacked them on the Tatooine Desert. A dangerous adversary, Qui-Gon had advised the boy later, an enemy of the Jedi Knights. He stepped out of the shadows like a large sand panther, his red and black tattooed face a terrifying mask, his yellow eyes bright with anticipation and rage. Blocking the way out, he stood waiting for the Jedi and their charges, a long-handled lightsaber held before him. Captain Panaka and his fighters backed away at once. Then, on command from Qui-Gon, Padme and her handmaidens gave ground as well, though less quickly and with more obvious reluctance. Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi stood alone in the Sith Lord's path. Together, they removed their capes and ignited their lightsabers. Their horned antagonist stripped away his cloak as well, then lifted the long-handled lightsaber he bore as if offering it for inspection. Gleaming blade fire jutted from both ends of the handle, revealing a deadly dual-blade weapon. A smile crossed the bearer's feral face as he swung the weapon before him in an idle, casual gesture, beckoning the Jedi ahead. Spreading out to either side, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan slowly advanced to meet him. On the plains south of Theed, the battle between the Trade Federation and the Gungan armies was fully joined. Gungans and battle droids were locked in close combat, a tangle of amphibious bodies and metal shells. The shield generators still held the Trade Federation tanks at bay. Only the droids had broken through, but there were many more of them than there were of the Gungans, and General Seal had committed all his reserves to the struggle. Jar Jar Binks fought at the center of the maelstrom, wielding a broken energy spear as a club, wheeling and stumbling this way and that, careening wildly. Caught up in the wiring of a battle droid he had decapitated,
He could not manage to free himself from the debris, and so was dragging the headless torso after him. The droid, still operating on autopilot despite the loss of its head, was firing its blaster continuously as Jar Jar whipped it this way and that, finding droid targets more often than Gungans, cutting a swath through their faltering ranks.
"'Tis Bombad! 'Tis Bombad!"
The Gungan shouted out the refrain over and over as he swung his shattered spear and fought to get free of his headless companion. When at last he broke away and was able to smash the remains of the droid into the ground, he was left standing in a wide open space that everyone on both sides was trying desperately to avoid. For a terrifying moment, Jar Jar literally did not know which way to turn. Then a cry went up from the Gungans closest.
"Jar Jar Binks! Jar Jar Binks!"
"Who, me?"
the befuddled Gungan gasped. Inspired troops rallied around him and pressed ahead once more, sweeping him along in a wild and unexpected counterattack. But the Trade Federation, unlike the Gungans, had other weapons left to call upon. OOM-9, responding to orders from the orbiting battleship command station, unleashed a battalion of destroyer droids from the transports. Down long rampways they wheeled, across the grasslands, over the bodies of shattered battle droids, and through the Gungan energy shield. Transforming into battle mode, they began to advance through the carnage, twin blasters firing in steady cadence. Gungans and Kadu went down in broken heaps, but other Gungans moved quickly to fill the gaps in their lines, slowing the destroyer droids, fighting to hold their ground. Back and forth the battle raged, the outcome undecided. Anakin Skywalker had made a promise to himself that he would protect Qui-Gon Jinn and Padme Nayberry from harm, that he would see to it somehow that nothing bad happened to them. He knew when he made the promise how hard it was going to be to keep. Somewhere in the back of his mind, where he would admit such things privately, he knew how foolish it was even to make such a commitment. But he was young and brave at heart, and he had lived his life pretty much on his own terms, because to live it any other way would have broken him long ago. It hadn't been easy doing so, especially as a slave. He had survived mostly because he had been able to find small victories in difficult situations, and because he had always believed that one day he would find a way to overcome the circumstances of his birth. His belief in himself had been rewarded. His life had been changed forever by his victory just days earlier in the Bunta Eve Pod Race on Tatooine. It was not so strange, then, that he should decide he could somehow affect the lives of a Jedi Knight and a Naboo Queen as well, even if he did not know precisely how. He was not afraid to accept such responsibility. He was not daunted by the challenge his decision presented. But now his resolve was put to the test. Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan closed with the Sith Lord in a clash of lightsabers that produced the shriek of diamond-edged saw blades cutting through metal. Wheeling across the center of the hangar, the combatants lunged and parried, attack and counterattack carried out in a fierce, no-holds-barred, no-quarter-given struggle. The Sith Lord was supple and quick, and he worked his way between the Jedi with confidence and ease, whipping his two-ended lightsaber back and forth between them, more than holding his own against their efforts to bring him down. He was skilled, Anakin saw, more skilled, perhaps, than the men he faced. And he was confident in a way that was disturbing. He would not be overcome easily. But Padme and the Naboo faced a more dangerous situation still. At the far end of the hangar, from off the plaza, a cluster of three destroyer droids wheeled through the doorway and began to unfold, assuming battle stance. R2-D2 saw them first and beeped a warning to the boy. Anakin tore his gaze away from the Jedi and the Sith Lord. The destroyer droids had transformed and were already moving forward, laser guns firing into the Naboo. Several soldiers went down, and Sabe was stung by a glancing blow that knocked her backward into the arms of Panaka. Padme and her companions resisted determinedly, but already they were falling back to find cover. "We've got to help, R2," the boy declared, standing up in the cockpit with the intention of doing something, anything, casting about futilely for a weapon. But R2-D2 was way ahead of him.
The little droid had plugged himself into the starfighter's computer system, lights blinking across his control panel as he triggered the big engines. Everything roared to life at once, startling Anakin, who fell back in the pilot's seat in surprise. Slowly, the ship began to levitate, wheeling out of its mooring space.
"Great work, R2!" Anakin shouted excitedly, reaching at once for the steering bars. "Now, let's see."
He wheeled the fighter about so that it was facing toward the combatants. His eyes scanned the control panel desperately, searching for the weapon systems. He knew something of fighters from salvaging wrecks, but nothing of Naboo fighters in particular, or of weapon systems in general. Most of what he knew was about guidance systems and engines, and most of that about pods, speeders, and aging transports.
"Which one? Which one?" he muttered,
his fingers passing over buttons and levers and switches, undecided. He lifted his eyes momentarily. One of the Naboo soldiers went down in a crumpled heap, his helmet and blaster flying away in a clatter of metal. Laser charges burned the metal girders and walls about the defenders as the destroyer droids continued their relentless attack on Padme's dwindling force. In desperation, Anakin threw a bank of switches set into a red panel. The fighter began to shake violently, a reaction to a shift in the stabilizers.
"Uh-oh, wrong ones,"
the boy breathed, throwing the switches back into place. His gaze roamed to a bank of four dark buttons recessed deep into finger holes and circled in green.
"Maybe these."
He pressed down on the buttons. Instantly, the nose lasers fired, their charges ripping into the battle droids. Three went down, charred and smoking scrap.
"Yeah! Droid blasters!"
he shouted gleefully, and behind him, R2-D2 beeped his approval. The remaining destroyer droids wheeled toward him, spreading out across the hangar floor to present a more difficult target. Behind them, Padme, her handmaidens, Panaka, and the remainder of the Naboo soldiers were racing for the door that led back toward the palace. Anakin watched over the rim of the cockpit as they disappeared safely out the door.
"Good luck," he whispered.
The destroyer droids were advancing on him now, their blasters firing, charges exploding all around him, shaking the fighter's slim frame. Anakin had a momentary glimpse of the Sith Lord driving the Jedi across the hangar and through an opening into a room beyond, pressing them backward relentlessly, pursuing them with a fury that was terrifying. Then they disappeared from view as well, and the boy was alone with his attackers. A laser blast struck the nose of his craft and knocked the ship sideways. The boy tightened his grip on the steering. He fired his own lasers in retaliation, but the destroyer droids had moved too far to either side to be affected, and his charges missed everything but the hangar walls. He dropped below the rim of the cockpit once more, eyes searching the control panel anew.
"Shields up,"
he hissed, forcing himself to concentrate as laser blasts streaked all around.
"Always on the right side. Shields are always on the right."
He flipped several likely switches, and the afterburner ignited with a rumble. He pushed another, then one more. The steering handle fought itself free of his grip, and the fighter wheeled about and streaked out through the hangar doors, lifting swiftly away. The cockpit hood slid smoothly into place, locking about the boy.
"R2, what's happening?" he screamed.
R2-D2's nervous beeps and whistles sounded through the intercom speakers.
"Yes, I know I pushed something," the boy answered. "No, I'm not doing anything."
He caught his breath as the beeps continued and read R2's words on his cockpit display.
"It's on automatic pilot? Well, try to override it."
The sleek yellow fighter had left the Naboo atmosphere and was entering deep space, leaving the planet behind, a green and blue jewel receding into the black. Ahead, a series of small silver dots appeared, growing steadily larger. Other ships.
"R2, where are we going?"
Anakin gasped, still trying to decipher the control panel. The comm system squawked, and suddenly he was hearing the voices of Rick Oley and the Naboo pilots who had taken off ahead of him.
"This is Bravo Leader," Rick's leathery voice broke through the static. "Bravo 2, intercept enemy fighters. Bravo 3, make your run on the transmitter station."
"Copy, Bravo Leader," the response came back.
Anakin could see them now, the silver dots taking on recognizable shape,
transforming into Naboo starfighters, spread out against the blackness, approaching the larger, blockier form of the Federation battleship.
"Enemy fighters straight ahead!" Riccoli warned suddenly on the comm.
At the same moment, R2-D2 beeped hurriedly at Anakin. The boy felt his stomach lurch as he read the display.
"What do you mean the autopilot is searching for the other ships? What other ships?"
His eyes shifted to the Naboo fighters ahead.
"Not those!"
R2-D2 whistled a quick confirmation. Anakin collapsed in his seat.
"The autopilot is taking us up there with them? Into battle?"
His mind raced.
"Well, get us off, autopilot R2."
The astromech droid beeped and whistled some more.
"There is no manual override," Anakin shouted in despair. "Or at least not any I can find. You'll have to rewire or something. R2, hurry!"
He stared helplessly through the cockpit glass as his fighter streaked directly toward the heart of the Trade Federation swarm, wondering what in the world he was going to do to save himself now. 22. Qui-Gon Jinn was one of the most able swordsmen in the Jedi Order. The Jedi Master he had trained under had considered him one of the best the Master had taught in his more than 400 years in the Order. Qui-Gon had fought in conflicts all across the galaxy in the span of his life, and against odds so great that many others would not have stood a chance. He had survived battles that had tested his skill and resolve in every conceivable way. But on this day, he had met his match. The Sith Lord he battled with Obi-Wan was more than his equal in weapons training, and he had the advantage of being younger and stronger. Qui-Gon was nearing 60. His youth was behind him, and his strength was beginning to diminish. His edge now, to the extent that he had one, came from his long experience and intuitive grasp of how an adversary might employ a lightsaber against him. Obi-Wan brought youth and stamina to the combat, but he had fought in only a few contests and was not battle-hardened. Together, they were able to hold their own against the Sith Lord, but their efforts at attack, at assuming the offensive against this dangerous adversary, were woefully inadequate. Darth Maul was a warrior in his prime, never to be any better, his powers at their apex. In addition, he was driven by his messianic hatred for and disdain of the Jedi Knights, the enemies of the Sith for millennia. He had worked and trained all his life for this moment, for a chance to meet a Jedi Knight in combat. It was an added bonus that he was able to engage two. He had no fear for himself, no doubt that he would win. He was focused in a way that Qui-Gon recognized at once. A Jedi's focus, mindful of the present, locked in on what was needed in the here and now. Qui-Gon saw it in his mad eyes and in the set of his red and black tattooed features. The Sith Lord was a living example of what the Jedi Master was always telling Obi-Wan about how best to hear the will of the Force. The three combatants fought their way across the hangar floor, lightsabers flashing, bringing to bear every skill they had acquired over the years. The Jedi Knights tried continually to press the attack, and indeed the Sith Lord was moving away from the Naboo and the starfighters and back toward the hangar's far wall. But Qui-Gon recognized that while it might seem as if the Jedi were driving him before them, it was the Sith Lord who was controlling the struggle. Wheeling and spinning, leaping and somersaulting with astonishing ease, their enemy was taking them with him, drawing them on to a place of his own choosing. His agility and dexterity allowed him to keep them both at bay, constantly attacking while at the same time effectively blunting their counterattacks, relentlessly searching for an opening in their defense. Qui-Gon pressed hard in the beginning, sensing how dangerous this man was, wanting to put an end to the combat quickly. Long hair flying out behind him, he attacked with ferocity and determination. Obi-Wan came with him, following his lead. They had fought together before, and they knew each other's moves. Qui-Gon had trained Obi-Wan, and while the younger Jedi was not yet his equal, he believed that one day Obi-Wan would be better than he had ever been. So they challenged the Sith Lord quickly, and just as quickly discovered that their best efforts were not good enough to achieve an early resolution. They settled into a pattern then, working as a team against their enemy, waiting for an opening.
but the Sith Lord was too smart to give them one, and so the battle had gone on. They fought their way out of the main hangar through an entry that led into a power station. Catwalks and overhangs crisscrossed a pit in which a tandem of generators that served the starship complex was housed. The room was cavernous and filled with the noise of heavy machinery. Ambient light filtered away in clouds of steam and layers of shadows. The Jedi and the Sith Lord battled onto one of the catwalks suspended above the generators, and the metal frame rang with the thudding of their boots and the clash of their lightsabers. Alone in the power station, hidden from the rest of Theed and its occupants, they intensified their struggle. The Sith Lord leapt from the bridge on which they fought to the one above, strange face shining with the heat of the battle and his own peculiar joy. The Jedi followed, one coming up in front of him, one behind, so that they had him pinned between them. Down the length of the catwalk they fought, lightsabers flashing, sparks flying from the metal railing of the walk as they smashed against it. Then Darth Maul caught Obi-Wan off balance and with a powerful kick knocked the Jedi completely over the railing. Taking advantage of the Sith Lord's assault on Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon forced Darth Maul over the railing as well. Down the Sith Lord tumbled, landing hard on a catwalk several levels below Obi-Wan. The force of the fall, or perhaps the unexpectedness of it, left him visibly stunned, and Qui-Gon leapt down after him, sensing a chance to put an end to things. But the Sith Lord struggled back to his feet quickly and raced away, taking the battle in a new direction. By the time Obi-Wan had recovered, Qui-Gon was in pursuit of Darth Maul, following him down the catwalk toward a small door at the far end of the power station. The Jedi Master went swiftly, arms and legs pumping, lightsaber flashing. He was worn and battered by now, close to exhaustion, but the Sith Lord was on the defensive at last, and he did not want to give him a chance to regroup. "Qui-Gon!" Obi-Wan called after him, trying to catch up, but the Jedi Master did not slow. One after the other, the three antagonists passed through the small door into a corridor beyond. They were moving quickly in their frenzied chase and were into the corridor before they realized what it was. Lasers ricocheted off buffer struts, pulsing in long bursts of crisscrossing brilliance that segmented the corridor at 5 points. The lasers had just begun to kick in when the Sith Lord and the Jedi Knights rushed through the entry. Darth Maul, in the lead, got farthest down the corridor and found himself trapped between walls 4 and 5. Qui-Gon, in close pursuit, was caught only one wall away. Obi-Wan, who was farthest away in the chase, did not get past even the first wall. Shocked into immobility by the buzz and flash of the lasers, the antagonists froze where they were, casting about for an escape, finding none. Qui-Gon took a quick measure of their location. They were in the service corridor for the melting pit, the disposal unit of the power station's residue. The service corridor was armed with lasers against unauthorized intrusion. There would be a shut-off switch somewhere at both ends of the passage, but it was too late to look for it now. The Jedi Knights stared down the laser-riddled corridor at the Sith Lord, who gave them a wicked grin. "Don't worry," they could read in his dark countenance. "You won't have long to wait for me." Qui-Gon exchanged a meaningful glance with Obi-Wan, then dropped into a guarded crouch to meditate and wait. Padme Neyberry, Queen of the Naboo, along with her handmaidens and Captain Panaka and his soldiers, followed the passageways that led out of the main hangar through the city and back to the palace. It was a running battle fought building by building, corridor by corridor, against the battle droids who had been left behind to garrison Theed. They encountered the droids both singly and in entire squads, and there was nothing for it each time but to fight their way clear without becoming entangled in a full-fledged engagement. As a consequence, they avoided a direct route in favor of one less likely to necessitate contact with the droids. At first they had no choice but to make straight for the palace, fleeing the battle in the main hangar, hoping that speed and surprise would carry them through. When that failed, Panaka began to take a more cautious approach. They used underground tunnels, hidden passageways, and connecting skywalks that avoided the patrols scouring the streets and plazas. When they were discovered, they fought their way clear as quickly as possible and went to ground, all the while continuing steadily on. In the end, they reached the palace much more quickly than Padme had dared to hope, entering from a skywalk bridging to a watchtower, then making their way along the palace halls toward the throne room. They were in the midst of this endeavor when an entire patrol of battle droids rounded a corner of the passage ahead of them and opened fire. Padme and her followers pressed back into the alcoves and doorways of the hall, firing their own weapons in response, searching for a way out. More battle droids were appearing, and alarms were sounding throughout the palace.
"Captain," Padme shouted at Panaka above the din of weapons fire, "we don't have time for this."
Panaka's sweat-streaked face glanced about hurriedly.
"Let's try outside," he shouted back.
Turning his blaster on a tall window, he blew out the frame and transparasteel. While her handmaidens and the bulk of the Naboo soldiers provided covering fire, the Queen and Panaka, together with half a dozen guards, broke from cover and climbed swiftly out the shattered window. But now Padme and her defenders found themselves trapped on a broad ledge 6 stories above a thundering waterfall and catchment that fed into a series of connecting ponds dotting the palace grounds. Pressed against the stone wall, the Queen cast about furiously for an escape route. Panaka shouted at his men to use their ascension guns, motioning toward a ledge 4 stories farther up on the building. The Naboo pulled the grapple line units from their belts, fitted them to the barrels of their blasters, pointed them skyward, and fired. Slender cables uncoiled like striking snakes, the steel-clawed ends embedding themselves in the stone. Swiftly, Padme and the other Naboo activated the ascension mechanism and were towed up the wall.
This book is continued on Disc 9.